The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mai, good afternoon. Thanks for joining Manx Radio for Man in Line this Monday lunchtime, a gorgeous day on the Isle of Man. And your chance to have your say by calling 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. As it's an open line today, the floor is yours, whatever you want to talk about. And the issue of whistleblowers has been in the news. The difficulties facing whistleblowers on the Isle of Man should be a wake-up call for Tyndall members. So says the Arbury Castle Town and Maloo member for Keys, Tim Glover's calling for more to be done to support those who raise concerns. Got a note in from 572, a text that says, what whistleblowers need is politicians to step up and then they can be trusted. Tim Glover promised to publish his dossier 2 years ago, so why has it taken so long to publish it? Have there been any omissions from the updated document when whistleblowers in government have to speak up and their managers ignore their concerns? Most have nowhere else to turn to but a politician, and they voted against themselves bringing a person for people to report to. MPs need to step up, and that is anonymous from 572. Let's get to the lines now, and Betty's first on today. Hello, Betty.
Hi. I'd just like to respond to Bonzo sneers at me on Friday. First of all, I wouldn't like to go back to the good old days, but some things were better then. And secondly, I think I might know a bit more than Bonzo about mental hospitals, because I lived in one for 3 years, not as a patient. And in fact, one of my children was born in one when I had a precipitate birth.
I think that's the point you were, I think most people understand the point you were making was that nowadays the mental health issues are far more visible, and certainly the whole industry and the health service make mental health issues far more visible. I don't want to paraphrase you, but I think you were saying was that people didn't used to talk about things like that years ago.
Yes, and you know, it was really awful in the late 90s when they disbanded some of the mental hospitals. I was working in Northampton at the time, and they let the patients out and put them in rented accommodation. And a lot of the landlords just gave them breakfast in the morning, said to them, don't come back till tea time. So they were just wandering the streets. And
yeah, it was called Care in the Community, wasn't it?
Yes. Anyway, there was one other thing I wanted. At least they were warm and safe in hospital. And some people do have to be in hospital because for their own safety and for others' safety. And also, I wondered why does Bonzo always slag everybody else off when he comes on the radio? Maybe he's not as sure of himself as he seems to be. He sometimes tells us some interesting facts, but in general, he sounds like an arrogant PR. I won't continue the word, or I would be banned, but it has 5 letters. And incidentally, to tell him that ECT is still carried out in hospitals on a modified basis. That's all about Bonzo. But please can I make a shout out for the care I got at the endoscopy when I went there on Wednesday, to thank Lisa and Wendy and MG. She just gave her initials. I think it was MG. And they were all so kind and helpful.
Okay. Happy to do that. All right. Thanks for calling, Betty.
Okay. Bye-bye.
11 minutes past 12 on Man in Line, and Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter.
Oh, hello, Andy. It's Peter Murcott here. Just on a totally different subject, religious instruction in schools. There's a new Education Amendment Act or bill. Certainly we had a consultation on it. And I responded to it. And I agreed with quite a number of the things that were there. But they were talking about the question that's been debated since 1871 about Christian teaching in schools. And if I remember rightly, they were talking about moving away from a formula that they had in 2001, which was highly unsatisfactory anyway, about being wholly or mainly of a broadly Christian character. And I said, I mean, my response was, I strongly disagreed. And I thought that the wording that they had in 2001, and I said so, was wholly unsatisfactory. And a lot of people are unaware anyway that there was an attempt in the Legislative Council in 2001 to move it more in a Christian direction, but the Keys wouldn't accept it. So it's an interesting debate. I don't think anyone has, except probably myself, has actually researched the whole history of it right back to 1872. And I gave an address back in 1996 about this, and I think it helped to influence some of the discussion that took place in 2001. It was called Vital to the Future. The words were actually the words of a Labour politician, Alfred Tear, who was in the Keys in 1921. And he said at that time that I think we're all agreed that the tenets of the Christian faith were essential to, and he used the words, vital to the future of the nation. And that's the spirit that I would like to see revived.
It's interesting. I mean, the whole subject, crikey, it's been called umpteen things, hasn't it? R-I-R-K-R-E in schools. And of course, if you are the parent or guardian of a child, you know all about it. When you're going through school, you know all about it. But the vast majority of people wouldn't know what sort of religious education or religious knowledge or religious instruction actually takes place in our schools, Peter. What sort of, how much religious education is on the curriculum?
Well, that I don't know, because I don't work in the school any longer. Before I came here, I was head of a church-aided school, and so obviously I was very knowledgeable about what we did. I can only work from hearsay. I don't like hearsay, really. One would need to have an in-depth investigation, which of course I'm not. That's not for me to do.
But what would what would you expect to be in the curriculum?
Well, if you go back to 1921, and as I say, I did research on all the statutes and gave an address upon it. In 1921, they created what was called the Religious Instruction Advisory Committee or Council. And it retained that name till 2003, although over the years they started calling it the Religious Education Advisory Committee. But ever so strictly, the name wasn't changed until 2003. In those days, it was completely agreed that the teaching in the schools should be Christian. And they were operating until 1949 on a section that was moved in 1872 and repeated again in 1921, which said that in every school, every elementary school, there shall be teaching in religious subjects and the reading of the Holy Bible. And the Isle of Man was the only place that ever said that. And that there should be such instruction therefrom and explanation thereof as may be suitable to the capacities of children. Now, that continued till 49. Now, in 1948, when they debated the whole subject, they altered the words to religious instruction. And again, if you read the Hansard, which is available in the Tynwald Library, you find that the majority of the MHKs were very unhappy about that vague word, especially a man called Sir John Bolton. And he said that that could include almost any religion, and he wanted it more specifically spelt out as Christian. And they assured him that religious instruction meant Christian religious instruction, though they'd stopped saying so. And that was a major mistake. And then in 2001, they introduced this very apologetic formula, which they borrowed from the Education Reform Act of 1988 in the UK, of wholly or mainly of a broadly Christian character. And I invited them to test it this way. If a man were to say to his wife, wholly or mainly and broadly love you, it doesn't sound very convincing, does it?
Not very romantic, is it?
Not very romantic. It sounds rather doubtful, especially if you say, I mainly and broadly love you. And the trouble is, with all those qualifying words, it was very, very difficult. It really opened the door to really a huge number of interpretations. What the LegCo tried to do under the late Lord Bishop Noel Jones, and they successfully moved a resolution that they would simplify the formula down to wholly or mainly Christian. And when that went back to the Keys, the vast majority all sort of couldn't possibly accept it, and they ran actually into deadlock. And it only the only reason why it eventually the original impenetrable formula of wholly or mainly and broadly went on was because LegCo very reluctantly gave way. But otherwise, there was a move, and it was the only place in the British Isles that did this, where the LegCo wanted to make it more definitely Christian. That was under the leadership of Bishop Noel Jones. Unfortunately, it didn't succeed, and I think it's a good time to start talking again about this, because from what I understood of the consultation, they are talking about even moving away from this very unsatisfactory formula. And that really historically is not what the legislators wanted, certainly not in 1872 and certainly not in 1949. And indeed, some of them still in 2001, certainly in the LegCo anyway. Anyway, I wrote a little booklet on that. If anybody ever wanted a copy, it's probably the only one that really traces the whole of the history of it. And it's called Vital to the Future, which picks up on the words of Alfred Thier in 1921. And if anybody wants a copy, I'll print them one off. I've got a transcript of what I said in 1996, and I still take the same view.
Okay, and how would people get hold of you?
Right, give me a ring. They did before once when I invited people to give me a ring. I got some phone calls back. I forget what it was about now. And number 611483, and quite a number of people did ring me. And they can have a copy of it, okay. And it's a verbatim. It's more or less verbatim of what I said. It was some people misunderstood it at the time. They happened to be people who weren't there, who weren't present at the meeting. But I really argued it out and explained the difference between instruction and education, and went through quite a lot of other points as well.
Okay, the telephone number again, Peter, was
611483.
Thanks for calling.
Like the last time.
Good to hear from you.
Ring me.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Okay. Bye bye.
21 minutes past 12. The Alman Education Department was asking the public. It was a 6-week consultation, which I presume is closed because it was May, just asking plans for specialist education centres and an emergency school closures, all sorts of things. But religious education was one of them. If you're involved in teaching, if you can tell us what is on the curriculum now in school regarding religious education, we'll find out more. Actually, because I'll be able to ask some of the students. We're back in the schools in October, Castle Rushen High School in October and Ramsey Grammar School in November. So I'll be asking some of the students then if there's any religious instruction. Remember it, RKRIRE. What is it? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Lots of messages to get through. First of all, back to the phones. Robert's on now. Hello, Robert.
I don't know what's going on with the schools, but it's chicken and bacon baps down at Grier at the moment.
Chicken and bacon baps? That's very, very restorative, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it does the job. It does the job.
Okay.
I wanted to talk a little bit. I know I'm going to slightly irk you, but I'm on your side, about whistleblowing and the fact that there's a few posts going up on Facebook about there's no real protection for them, etc., etc., etc. What would it take, and I imagine Phil Gorn would know a bit more about this in respect, but what would it take to have an amendment to the Constitution to protect whistleblowers?
Well, we're starting at the moment with this thing that Tim Glover's doing, really, to get some traction on action for. And basically, he's talking about the difficulties that whistleblowers face, and it's a wake-up call for members. So it's got to go to the members, first of all. There was a previous committee talked about it. It was discussed in Tynwald, but didn't really get anywhere. And the Onken MHK, Julie Edge, chaired a whistleblowing committee as well.
But surely the most supreme document that we have that could protect them is the Constitution. So I'll bring it back to the main thing about when are they actually going to drill down and, you know, knock tax on the wall with the Constitution in terms of putting up an amendment to
it. I mean, obviously, this is going to be important because a year this coming Wednesday, there's going to be a general election. So if it's something that's important to you, I'd be asking every candidate who comes to your door what their view is on the proposal for whistleblowers.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was just a few comments. Al Cannon, he's not doing too well. God bless him. He's someone's just walked in, sorry, with a cup of tea. So he's not doing too well, and a lot of people think that he's got a little circle around him that no one can penetrate. So it's rolled out the barrel at the moment.
Well, he's got the Council of Ministers.
He has, but I mean, he's lost lots of people on jobs, hasn't he? So there's only so many people he can re-employ. So
yeah, that's true.
His back's up against the wall at the moment. Yeah. So, I mean, it's. I think that's why they're feeling it at the moment in terms of the political side of things, because there's not many places to go on the chessboard.
Okay. All right. Enjoy your chicken and bacon bap. Thanks for calling.
I will. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye now. Big Rog. Hello, Rog in Sunny Peel said, in my day, it was called Divinity. When you were at school, what was it called? Divinity? R-I-R-K-R-E? Will it take Tim? Will Tim Glover will be working with Julie Edge on whistleblowing, says Andrea. And note in, the government launched a £2 million, is it a £2 million initiative to regenerate the high street? The chap that was in charge has moved to head up on DEFA, and nothing more seems to be said about the matter. Now, Mr. Ashford has suggested the town centre could use for housing stock. Is this conflicting strategies indicating we are moving further away from a joined-up government? David Ashford was on Max Radio earlier on today. We may talk about that, just about using town centres and the fact that there are empty units in some of our shopping centres in Parliament Street, Ramsey, Michael Street in Peel, certainly, Station Road in Port Erin, certainly in Castle Street and in Strand Street in Douglas. There are empty units. Now, that may be simply because a tenant's moved out and is continuing to pay the rent, in which case the owner's perfectly happy, or it may be that the lease has expired and the owner's not getting anything in there. But what would you think to more people living in town centres in the future? It's something the Cabinet Office Minister says he expects to come up in a consultation into the government's strategic plan. The document sets out what the island will look like in the future, including land and property use. Any thoughts on that? Then by all means do get in touch. Here's Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Andy. How you doing, fella?
Very well.
Good. Two little things. I won't keep you long. Just two little things. Religious education should be banned. End of story. Force feeding 5, 6, 7 year olds, you know, dogma, for want of a better word, and teaching them about a fictitious character that may or may not have existed, is like teaching kids about the tooth fairy or about Father Christmas. It's ridiculous. I mean, religion causes more wars, more strife than anything in the world, and then you've got Murcott coming on saying that we should definitely teach it in schools. The man's mad. We don't need religious education in schools at all.
How do you feel about hymns then?
No, absolutely not. I mean, anything that says, oh, God, this, Jesus, this, God, that, Jesus. No, if kids want to do that, they should go to Sunday school with their parents. When I was at school at Ballacameen, my mother, when she found out I was having to do religious education, my mother went to the school and demanded that I was taken out of the class, because my mother said that if I was going to go down the religious road, I would choose that for myself, and she did not want a complete stranger, i.e. a teacher, forcing their beliefs onto me. And my mother was very, very clever in that respect, and she got me taken out of it. And that's the best thing that my mother ever did for me, was getting me taken out of RE, and I was so pleased that she did that.
So how do you feel about the bishop being in Tynwald?
I think it's an absolute farce. I mean, why should the bishop have a vote in Tynwald? The bishop's not been elected by anybody on this island, so the bishop shouldn't have a vote. I've got no problem with a bishop. I certainly think that a female bishop is a step forward for an archaic organisation that doesn't actually do anything positive in the 21st century. I do agree that putting a woman in charge of these groups and these organisations is a step forward. But no, I mean, you know, I'm not a Christian. I'm not religious. I'm the complete opposite, in fact. I vote the other side, if you know what I mean. But that's just my opinion. It's an insidious thing that's creeping more and more into schools. And a child might get themselves confused about, oh, if I do this, I'm going to go to hell. If I do that, I'm going to go to hell. It's an absolute you know, a waste of a lesson that they could be learning something completely different that will benefit them when they go into the job market. So you've got an O level or an A level in religious education. That's going to do you good when you want to go work for the Isle of Man Bank, doesn't it?
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. You were talking about this absolute nonsense about looking at disused shops, abandoned shops and stuff like that in town centres. I was just thinking about this at the top of my head. Doesn't a government department own the old ShopRite under the Chester Street car park?
Yes.
Right. Well, there's your answer. Can't you just turn that into, say, 30 little tiny self-contained units? The government own it.
What, for accommodation?
Yeah, why not? It's big enough.
You wouldn't have much of a view, would you, at the back?
No, you wouldn't have much of a view at the back. But then again, if you turned the old Charles Alexander's into a flat, you wouldn't have much of a view either. Mm. You know, they're talking a load of nonsense. I understand if it's out of town, you know, say an old office block in Athol Street or Hill Street. That makes more sense than saying in town. Because let's face it, in town is predominantly shops, yeah, isn't it?
But you know that iron skeleton that still hasn't been built now after about 55 years, the one that used to be where KFC is. Now, that was planned to be retail at street level and flats above it. I think there were going to be 8 flats above that. So that was,
that's,
I mean,
right.
And that was accepted that the planning committee waved that through. That was going to happen. How do you feel about flats above shops in, say, Strand Street, Castle Street, Parliament Street or what have you?
Well, I was always led to believe that if you had a commercial premises, you were not allowed to have a flat above it in case of a fire regulations. That's what I was always led to believe.
Well, I mean, certainly if you look at Prospect Terrace, there are flats above where the old Isle of Man Bank used to be on Prospect Terrace. There are flats above there.
I know. Oh, just one more thing. This shard that we're getting built at the bus station.
Yeah.
Well, what was it? 140 metres tall or something, wasn't
it?
14 foot. Has anybody actually looked at this properly and thought, is this an April Fool that's just joke that's just carried on? Because if you think about it, something that tall is going to shadow every building around it. So anybody that works in ICM, the office to block next to it, they're going to be permanently in the dark. And I'm fairly certain they won't like that. So I've got a funny feeling, you know, that this is one of those you know, catch me if you can, little escapades that's going on. Because it, Andy, if they built that thing, you'd be able to see it from Sellafield, wouldn't you? It'd be that big.
Well, it may be one of those where they're applying for 14 stories, but they'll accept 8. You know, one of those things.
Yes. Yeah, that's more like it. They'll go for the big one, the big books, the big tax relief, and then they'll turn around and say, well, actually, we're only going to do 6 levels, but we're keeping the tax relief.
Well, it wouldn't work that way, because you only get the tax relief when you've finished, apparently. You only get the tax relief, or you get the money back when everything's finished. But we'll see, anyway.
Anyway, Andy, as per usual, mate, it's been lovely chatting with you, and you enjoy your afternoon off.
All right, take care. Thanks for calling today, and I think we've got... it is Alwyn. Hello, Alwyn.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. How's Derby Haven and everything?
Derby Haven is like a bowling green.
Okay.
You know about Derby Haven, then?
What do you want to tell the nation, Alwyn?
Three layers of tarmac adam from Hango Hill to Derby Haven over the last 3 weeks. And none of it, notice on the radio to say there's traffic lights for weeks on end. And now they've finished right by the border of Derby Haven and left the corner, which is the worst part. There was nothing wrong with the Derby Haven road. There wasn't even a pothole on it. And yet they've wasted 3 layers of tarmac adam. You can hardly see the curb now. It's gone up so much. That's the first thing I want to bring up. And how much it's cost and how much overspend has been on that work. The next thing is the road from Castle Rushen to the Southern Hundred has been crying out for repairs for the last 2 years, and yet they can't see that it needs repairing, and yet they can go to Derby Haven where it's been wasted. The other thing is we cannot wait for Bolasola Corner to next year to stop the flooding. Are they waiting for an accident and somebody planing on the water? I don't know whether you realise that every time it rains now, everybody's got to slow down or you get drowned or you've got to go to the wrong side of the road to get through. And nobody seems to be doing anything about it.
Is this the corner by what's going to be the bypass or the one by the Whitestone pub?
Yeah, well, they say they're not going to repair the corner or the drainage until the work is done on the new roundabout.
Right.
I don't think they can wait that long. It's getting to the stage now that people are frightened to go through that water. It's so deep when we're getting more. And the winter hasn't started yet. So I'm just leaving that because tomorrow you might be busy.
Yeah.
So that's a couple of questions you can use to try and get something done. The second thing is Castle Rushen should be repaired. There's no doubt about it. The other thing is you talked about passenger transfer the other day.
Oh, yes.
From Liverpool. Now, I had a funny experience a couple of weeks ago. I was with the wheelchair party, and we were put on the plane with a ramp, which was fine. But after we got on, there was about 10 of us, after we got on the plane at Liverpool, the ramp was taken away. And I couldn't understand that. There were 60 people still to come on the plane. So I asked the question, why is the ramp taken away? Oh, the rest of the people are not insured to come on the ramp. I said, pardon? They're not insured to come on the ramp, the passengers. So the ramp taken away, the steps put back, and the rest of the passengers put on the steps, which is not easy. And there were some people that had come from hospital had to climb the stairs. Now, there's two things here. Are Liverpool Airport charging for every passenger to go up the ramp? That's a question I need answering, because I think it's disgraceful if they are. And the other thing is, last year, I spoke to the manager of the steam packet, and I queried the time of when the Mananan sails to Liverpool when it's only doing one journey per day. Now, as you know, the one journey per day is 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I said to the manager, why 3 o'clock? Why can't you go at 12 o'clock? If you went at 12 o'clock, you would miss the Liverpool traffic at 5:45 because you'd be in for 2:30. You could come back at a reasonable time and be in Douglas for 7:00, and people could then go and get their evening meal. Also, if they got off the boat in Liverpool at 2:30, people could maybe find part of their way home in daylight instead of scratching around in the dark. All these things are for the public's benefit. The steam package should be running the boats to suit the public, not to suit themselves.
And what was the answer, Alwyn?
He said he would look into it, and I haven't heard a word. He thought it was a good idea. He did say that to me. But he said it might be a crew problem. I said, how could it be a crew problem? If I was a crew and sailor, I would rather go to work at 12 o'clock and finish at 7:30 than go to work at 3 o'clock and finish at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
To me, there's no answer to that.
So, as you say, that's only when there's one sailing, because when there
yes,
are two sailings...
I know, but the beginning of the season...
Yeah, for two sailings...
The beginning of the season, and yeah. Now, that is only one, except at the weekend.
Yeah.
Not only that, people are... I've got to be out of their hotel by 10 or 12 o'clock, so where they're hanging around till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, we're encouraging the elderly. I'm talking about the elderly people who look at the times and say, no, we're not doing that. That's arriving at 10 o'clock at night, and it might be late. No, if it was earlier, they might have second thoughts. Because if they go on an ordinary day in the summer, they've got to check in about 6:15 for a 7:15 boat.
Okay.
So, I just... think that these are a good idea. I don't know what the rest of the public think.
No, certainly that whole point about one, if there's one return a day starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, puts people at a disadvantage. Just give us that question again regarding the ramp at Liverpool, would you, Alwyn?
Well, the ramp at Liverpool, they let the passenger transfer passengers on from the hospital with the ramp, which was fastened to the plane, which is ideal. And it's ideal at Ronald's Way as well. But we were on sitting in the plane, and I looked around, and I seen the ramp being taken away. And I knew the passengers, and I knew people that were still waiting to get on as a passenger, waiting in the airport building. So I said, why has it gone away? Oh, they're not insured to come up the ramp. Now, are they not insured because Liverpool are charging for it? For everybody going up the ramp? I don't know, but maybe the Minister of Infrastructure could tell me. I think actually infrastructure is too big in a part anyway.
Mm.
I think the department is far too big.
Okay, all right. We appreciate that. You covered a lot of ground there. Thanks, Alwyn.
I hope I haven't been too long. Thank you,
Andy.
You're
fantastic. Welcome anytime. Thanks for calling. And if anybody can get to the bottom of the Derby Haven tarmac, we'd appreciate that as well.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
Here's to the hard-working heating machines that have kept us cosy. Let's big up the boilers that keep our hot water flowing flawlessly. But now, it's time to give your boiler some tender loving care with a service from Manx Petroleum. With affordable service plans for oil-fired boilers and tanks, you can spread the cost interest-free using our budget account. Make your boiler brilliant again. Visit mp.im for more information. Manx Petroleum, always here for you.
Hi Liz, I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions. The copper network is being switched off, affecting Wi-Fi and home phones if you are not already on fibre. To help with the transition, we'll be hosting drop-in events across the island where you can speak with our dedicated community partner for personalised assistance. The next event will take place on Thursday the 25th of September from 2 till 4:30pm at St John's Football Club. No appointments needed, just drop in within that time frame. See mt.im/futureready for more information.
Dad, are you actually training this year?
Oh, yeah, no more pies for me.
It'll take more than that to beat me.
Laugh all you want, but I feel great. Mud is life.
So you're not falling in the mud again?
I bet he will.
You'll never let me forget that, will you?
Whether you're there to win, wobble, or just laugh yourself fit, on October the 5th, Tough Mucker is back and bigger than ever. Brought to you by Isle Listen and Island Escapes, supported by Manx Radio.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Feel your body heavy and relaxed. Breathe in and be aware of the space around you.
This month's podcast is for comfort and relaxation. Brought to you by The Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
Breathe in and tell yourself something lovely. If you're struggling with this, what would you say to someone who you love?
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And David's on now. Hello, David.
Hi, Andy. Did you get your post this morning? And in the post, I don't know whether anybody else got there, there's a document from, it's under the infrastructure pamphlet regarding landowner's guide to roads, hedges and tree management.
Yeah, got it this morning. The open out thing with the little diagram in the middle of what you've got to do.
What a tree looks like, and yeah. What your pavement looks like, and stuff like that. So the question I want to ask is, because I always look at the back and think to myself, who is it printed by? Was it done locally? And there's nothing there. All it does say there, it says it was issued or created maybe March 2025. So why is it taking so long to get them out? And Andy was going to say too is, how many people do you think are living in apartments now? And in places where there's no trees, or they're not living near an edge of a road and so forth, say they printed, say, 20,000 of them. What's that cost, and what's that value for money? We did a few adverts, didn't they, on the radio,
yeah.
Which is probably better and more of a pickup from people. And I don't know what's going on. So it brought me to when the guy was talking about before about planning,
yeah.
And like a development code down there, which is... And all these properties are owned by the taxpayer, as far as I'm concerned, and under supervision of the government departments. So I listened to Phil Gorn and David Ashford on Sunday there. I've ordered me pack. I want it in paper form, because the electronic version just jumps about all the time when you're trying to do it. So I've ordered the pack. So I encourage people to get involved. Because, like he did say, this is an opportunity before the election to try and say what's wrong with your particular areas. And it's over the whole of the island, too. Which brings me up to, what's happening with the North Quay? Do you know all those ones coming down from Manx Radio? You get to the gasworks,
yeah.
Road, and all those giant holes in the ground. And then you flip over. Did Kell Properties ever get permission? For their side, did they?
For Newsons?
Yeah. They got one off.
Yeah, I think they got some for some of the properties, whether I think they're putting offices or shops or what have you. But the Newsons, the old Newsons building, the one that's propped up at the moment, that's still, they didn't get planning on that.
Oh, right. So the other one is, too, the giant skyscraper that the guy was on about before.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that. And I just, when I first saw that, because I took an interest in planning and stuff like that, is it was massive. It was like an American tower, isn't it, that was going to be built in the centre of the town.
Yeah.
And the other things that haven't happened is, look at all those properties which are on custodial by this government that we own, and that's the old Summerland site. I'll have to flip through them. Park Road School. We own two pubs, the Quarter Bridge. Nothing's happening there. And then the one down, I always forget it, near the Villa Marina there.
Bowling
the Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Used as vehicle auctions site to sell old vehicles off and stuff like that. But there's other sorts of properties that government owned. And wasn't there somebody, one of the members, tasked with, maybe it was Tim Krugel actually, as part of the savings to sell off some of the assets they don't need anymore?
Yeah.
And then we've got the vehicle testing centre. There must be loads of things that are lying empty there, which is owned by government. And the other thing, we're not getting any rates on it, are we? The local authority doesn't get any rates from government, do they?
Is that true?
I don't think so. They don't pay any rates, as far as I know.
Crikey.
The problem we've got in Onchan is, I could check elsewhere, but there's no old government sites in Onchan, which are not getting used. I mean, Summerland is just on the curtilage of Onchan. I think the brews on the backside of it belong in Onchan, but that's not, it's not the building site there. And what are we going to do with it eventually? I don't think it'll ever have the turbine thing, but it could be a nice place to have apartments in there. A developer could do something with it. But there's an opportunity for there for people who want to test their brains over the winter months there is get this document and start filling it in.
Yeah.
And well, like David Ashford said, you don't have to do all of it. You can do parts of it.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you. Well, if you've got your leaflet today, Landowner's Guide, Roadside Hedge and Tree Management. Very interesting, and that'll fill the afternoon for you. A note in, this is from Ollie, who just said, the trouble with the patient transfer, we were talking about last week how, and it was a lady who was getting back, she was going to Liverpool for treatments, get to the airport at 6 in the morning and not getting back until 9 o'clock at night, 8:55 at night. The trouble with the patient transfer system, says Ollie, is that civil servants have been left to deal on the contract with Loganair. Now, what should have happened was that any contract should stipulate that the return flight should land back on the Isle of Man no later than 6 p.m. Now, this is not a new idea. It was the case when Flybe operated the patient transfer system. The flight landed no later than 6 p.m. Now, Loganair only have two locally based aircraft. Flybe had three. So the logistics of the patient transfer system are different. But the fact is, what I think, Ollie says, apparently he thinks that the civil servants have had rings run round them. Well, there we are. And Tony's on now. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Very well today. That was a lovely day, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Nice to see a bit of sunshine after all the rain. But it's filling the reservoirs, so global warming's with us and we've got water.
Yes, for all the people who panicked that we were going to dry up over the summer, they're going to be full soon. They're going to be full soon.
Oh, and the other side of the coin is next year it'll be a drought and, well, we'll all burn to death. What I was calling for was the man before who was very adamant that we shouldn't have a bishop, we shouldn't have any religious education. He's a bit short-sighted.
Well, what he said, he didn't say we shouldn't have a bishop. He just said the bishop shouldn't have a vote in Tynwald.
No, I think he should, because he's the only person in there who's independent. And it adds, also gives you continuity. Whereas when governments change, you don't get any continuity. The continuity relies entirely on the department heads, who never change or seem to disappear and come back. And so he actually adds a piece of continuity within government, which I think is a good thing. But what I'm trying to get to was that he was very adamant we shouldn't have any religious education, which I think is a little bit short-sighted. Because if you grow up in today's world, you need to know that there are different religions out there who approach things differently. And there's also the question of, okay, all the MHKs swear on a Bible or they swear on something that they're going to do the right thing and obey the rules, etc., etc. Not necessarily that they will, but they swear they will.
And prayers are said ahead of sittings.
Correct. So my question is then, if you ignore all that, then the people growing up who aren't given any education whatsoever about it are going to be a bit ignorant when it comes down to we've got riots on the streets because somebody's upset a Muslim and burnt a Koran, which they get very agitated about. And if you were in Saudi Arabia, for instance, you'd have to realise that the national religion is Muslim, and they don't appreciate somebody walking around with a Christian cross on and advocating you should change your religion, because under the rules of the Quran, you're not allowed to do that. But anyway, that's by the by. The issue is, I'm not saying that religious education should hammer on about what's in the Bible or anything else, but there must be some sort of means of telling children that there are different religions and people are different. Some worship different gods, etc., etc. So you need to have that. Otherwise, they'll end up going out in the world and they will not be aware.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's something that we should do as a nation, that we should say, hey, there are different people out there. You don't have to do this, you don't have to do that, but be aware. Different people think about different things and approach things differently.
Okay. All right, we've got to go, right, Tony. We're just about out of time.
Oh, well, you have a good week. Have a good week ahead.
Okay. Thanks for calling today.
Make Athol Airport Parking your wash-and-go partner when parking at the airport. With no advance booking required, simply park your car in the designated Athol rental return spaces right next to the terminal. Hand your key to our valet desk, and while you're away, we'll wash your vehicle and return your car to the terminal for when you get back. For prices and our full range of services, including comprehensive valeting menu, just search Athol Airport Parking online. Athol Airport Parking, part of the trusted Athol Garage Group.
Logan Air says, let the wee ones fly. Kids aged 11 and under go fare free. Just pay the taxes. Your next family adventure awaits. Book by the 23rd of September. Find deals at loganair.co.uk. T's and C's apply, subject to availability. Children must travel with a full fare-paying accompanying adult.
Corkhill and Callow are the longest-serving funeral directors on the island, relied upon during the most difficult times. We understand that nobody wants to arrange a funeral. That's what we're here for. Our small, friendly team are here to support you, making a challenging time more manageable. With our base in Ramsey and now open in Ballasalla, let us take care of everything so that you can focus on what matters most. Call Corkhill and Callow on 855 354.
It's the perfect time to plant spring bulbs and winter pansies, and there's a wide range available at Ramsey Garden Centre, plus a full range of garden essentials for indoor and out, including battery lights. Visit Ramsey Garden Centre, open 7 days a week.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's Charlie now. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, babe. Going on before about living above shops in Castlefield or Stanfield.
Yeah.
All the small businesses owners used to live above their shops. So, how's that? Hold on.
Turn your Alexa down. We're all getting confused.
Businesses owners used to live above their shops. So, how's that?
Right. That's fine.
I just have it on. Sorry. Right, but they'd be only when the big supermarkets come in, that seemed to slow down. But about 15 years ago, I renovated the property next to the British, and the owner was going to turn to flats, and they were told it was three stories above the shop, and they were told, no, it's too high up. So this thing further down the quay, how many floors are they talking about doing?
Oh, the big place, you mean?
Yeah, the new place.
14 stories. The tower's going to have 14 stories, yeah. Apparently, yeah.
I don't think we've got any fire equipment that will reach up to 14 stories on the island.
I think you might have a point there. So do you think it's going to be practical to get people back living above shops and what have you in towns?
Well, the majority of shopfronts now, they've taken the access out. They used to have access to a shop and an access to the accommodation.
That's right. They'd have a side door, wouldn't they?
Yeah. But now there's a full shop front, no side door. Are you going to get people walking up back lanes to go into their apartments?
No, you wouldn't do that, would you? You want to walk through a proper door.
Yeah. Plus the fact, as I say, safety-wise, on this new tower block, how can they accept planning for it if they can't have fire equipment to to get up there. What are they going to do? Send to Anglesey to get the helicopter through.
All right. Okay. Good to hear from you, Charlie. Thanks for calling today.
Bye.
Thanks for calling today. It's open line all this week. Next Tuesday, a week tomorrow, the DOI minister is going to be Michelle Hayward, MHK. So if you've got a question regarding this, of course you'll have a question regarding the DOI. Do get whether or not it's the Balfane roundabout, when on earth the Balfane roundabout is going to open. I'm sure there'll be a big ribbon-cutting celebration. Maybe they'll invite Man in Line to that. And remember, this coming Wednesday, not only is it 1 year to go after this Wednesday to the general election next September 24th, but there's also the public accountability meeting in Ramsey at the Ramsey Town Hall this Wednesday, 24th, 7 o'clock. It'll be streamed live via the Commissioner's Facebook page. That's this Wednesday, the public accountability meeting for Ramsey. Just for your information, 768 tells me and you the Green Living Grant's closed to applicants for a while. The 30th of September is the deadline for work on approved improvements to be completed. I emailed them to ask as I had work done but would like more when I can afford the shortfall. That was their reply. There is another scheme in the pipeline though. Thanks for it. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. Enjoy your Monday.
WINT.